Welcome back, my dears. I hope, however, that time went, there was a sense of nurturance, and a little bit of spaciousness, perhaps. So, as I mentioned before, we'll just come back into the sit. So, I want to invite each of us to allow the body to come into a posture that allows us to feel upright, and alert. And again, not, this is more about the energetics than the actual posture. Leaning into a reality that these teachings are ennobling. And can we kind of find that inner nobility that is a companion to the courage it takes to actually sit quietly with ourselves, taking our place, our feet rested on the earth, drawing into the earth energies, if that feels helpful. The image I often use and often share is sort of the barefooted and loamy soil, and imagining our feet just connecting into the earth, all the energies that don't serve us drain into the earth to be alchemized. Sort of down one leg and up the other leg, the sense of grounded stability, strength, steadiness, whatever earth qualities may be helpful today. Imagine that coming up through the other leg. But again, a sense of grounded connectedness to the earth. And then they also availing ourselves of the energies of the heavens, sense of spaciousness, light, possibility. It's almost like a click. Energies below, energies above, taking our place in this family of beings on this earth. And of course, in this circle. Yeah. And for the anchor of our time today, I want to invite us both to keep maybe 60, 50, 60% of our attention in the body. So it may just be allowing some attention to rest on the sensation of what the sit bones are being supported by, the chair, the cushion, the floor, the couch, the bed, whatever. Or allowing some amount of awareness to stay on that point of connection of feet to the earth. And allowing the rest of the attention to just notice and watch the thought patterns. That oft shared phrase or image of the mind is like the blue sky, the expansive blue sky. That's the mind's natural abiding. And then the thoughts come in and kind of mess all that up. Again, saying with that image, sort of the thoughts are like clouds, and sometimes they're just beautiful puffy white clouds or horsetail clouds or thunderstorm clouds. It's a dark, it feels like the sky is very low. Yeah. And just noticing, this is sort of how the thought patterns go. As my friend Juliana shares, who sometimes teaches this class, the mind secretes thoughts like the mouth secretes saliva. That's what it does. And thankfully, these teachings allow us to strengthen our ability to choose. I'll follow that thought. I'm not going to follow that thought. Is that thought stressing me out? Is that thought leading me to more ease? And coming back to the truth of a thought is just a thought. It arises from somewhere, it disappears into somewhere. And part of the anchor, the invitation for this anchor is just to watch that. Oh, here comes a thought. If the image of a cloud is helpful, what kind of cloud is that? Okay. But we stay in the observer seat, which is why I prefaced all this by saying, let's keep some attention in the body. So, an awareness of this body sitting here, being supported by the chair, the couch, the cushion, whatever. Also supported by this earth, if our feet are touching the ground. And we can shine this light if imbued with curiosity, And the awareness of, well, how is it in the mind? What are the patterns here? Maybe patterns of comparing, judging others, self-judging, a pattern of list making, a pattern of having conversations with someone or replaying conversations, or how songs sometimes get stuck in our heads. All the different myriad of ways that the thought machine generates thoughts. And being able to rest in the incredible awareness of, oh, these are just thoughts. They come and they go. Some are pleasant, some are unpleasant. Some we get entangled in, some we don't. Okay. So, again, for our time today, sitting together, it's just watching, resting in the body, keeping some awareness in the body, and just watching these are, and noticing, being curious about the different thought patterns. We don't need to change them or be upset by them. We're just trying again to cultivate the sense of, huh, that's interesting. In the mind right now, it's like this. Not a problem. Nothing we really need to do other than give ourselves permission just to, oh, sweetie, just check this out. What's happening in the mind? It's like this. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we see how it is. Sometimes it's pleasant, sometimes it's unpleasant. Usually it's a combination of those. And again, just please feel my appreciation that we have this opportunity to sit together. Thank you. Always so lovely to sit together. Today I wanted to play around with or explore this so under the umbrella of equanimity, upekkha is the Pali word, most frequently translated as sitting down in the middleness of it. There's also a version different slightly different translation of sort of the 30,000 foot view, where I think it's Sylvia that talks about sort of seeing the world through grandmotherly eyes, in that sense of, oh yeah, I've seen this. So cultivating a sense of, it's an invitation to cultivate the sense of peace, balance, steadiness in a world right now that is none of those things. It just feels so challenging, and talking with friends and folks I'm working with, it is so challenging to kind of find our place in the middleness of all that's going on, whether it's health challenges that we as individuals are working with, or health challenges dear ones, friends of ours are dealing with. It is rough out there. And I know it probably always has been, but it just seems rougher now than pre-COVID. And I think coming back to these teachings of equanimity can be so helpful. Because it's so hard. And even again, within ourselves, being able to find places of rest, places of stillness within ourselves momentarily, though it might be, as rest notes of, thank you, as rest notes of being able just to settle, even just for a moment. These teachings, sort of a cultivation of enlightenment, even just for a moment, that the land of enlightenment may or may not sort of be somewhere out there, it's kind of irrelevant. It's more, what can we do with what's happening in this moment, our responses, our reactions, our thoughts, which is why I wanted to have us work with the thinking mind during the meditation, just as a way of noticing. So, left unbidden, this is what the mind does. Perhaps more importantly, and this is how I react to it. Whether I jump on that thought of complaining or perseverating or trying to figure something out, that has its own energy quality. Much like the a thought that might have an emotional charge, it could move through, or we could kind of grab onto it, and then there's sort of all the emotionality that might come up, like, yeah, the thing that someone said, I'm so angry about it, blah, 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 and then the whole body's involved, and it takes a little bit more to unwind that. So I came across this poem. Peace is this moment without judgment. Do you think peace requires an end to war or tigers eating only vegetables? Does peace require an absence from your boss, your spouse, yourself? Do you think peace will come some other place than here, some other time than now, in some other heart than yours? Peace in this moment without judgment, that is all. This moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. Peace in this moment without thinking that it should be some other way, that you should feel some other thing, that your life should unfold according to your plans. Peace is this moment without judgment, this moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. That's pretty radical. Because some things, a lot of things that are pleasant are, I mean, a lot of things that are present are unpleasant. And the push, like, I don't want this. Whose fault is it, and what can I do to make it go away? That can be often our first response or second, to kind of move it away or exile it or in some way have it be other than it is. So again, this radical, radical act of saying, okay, whatever is welcome. A different flavoring of that same sentiment, which I've said before, I would. If I wanted to have words tattooed on my arm, this is what they would be. It's Galway Canal's prayer. Whatever happens, whatever, what is what I want. Only that, but that. So it even goes a little farther, saying, whatever is what I want. Sometimes I feel like in saying that, it's like, if I say that, is the sky going to crash on my head? And in the Tibetan culture, there could prayer of like, please give me enough challenges so that my heart can awaken. I'm like, oh, I that no, that just feels like tempting fate in a way I don't know that I want to. But this way of leaning into, okay, it is like this. Okay, and I was listening to Winnie Nevera, a teacher primarily at IMS, and she was sharing with working with a woman. I'll try and truncate the story that has tinnitus, the ringing in the ear. And it was on, I think, a longer retreat. And the woman came in for an interview and she's like, "I have tinnitus." And Vinny's like, Connie's like, "Well, how is it? Well, I have this condition." Yeah, but how is it? And the woman kept saying, "I have tinnitus," without being able to kind of get into how it was actually. And the woman's like, I know what you're doing. It's as if someone walked in that had a leg amputated, and you'd say, you just have to accept that your leg's been amputated. And Connie's like, well, as opposed to what? Like that other leg isn't going to grow back. And I was so struck by that. She said it was sort of in a humorous way, but that reality of like, oh, but it is this way. Oh, oftentimes it's not to say like a doormat, then we can't do anything about it. Discernment is still very much our friend and companion to be able to help guide us to where we can make skillful choices to improve situations that can be improved. But sometimes, oh, sweetie, it is like this in this moment. Again, so really wanting to stress this. So we hold on to discernment, and we hold on to sort of the wise effort. So to take actions that are necessary to take, it's not about, not ever about like, oh, I'll have to accept this if we're in a work environment that's toxic or a relationship that's abusive. No, but it's more working with the reactivity that can come, be like, this isn't okay, this isn't right, and fighting against how it is, as opposed to perhaps harnessing that energy that might go out into the fight to say, okay, what's necessary? What's the skillful move here? What is the wise response to take care of myself, to take care of others, to move into a place accompanied by a sense of equanimity, the sense of discernment, a sense of openness, right? And a way of looking at, okay, these are the reality, these are the givens, these are the cards I was dealt in this lifetime. Some are good, some no, not so much. Okay, so then how do we want to respond? Given this, how it is in this moment. Again, a line of Tara Brach, which I love, which I might tattoo on the other arm if I were predisposed to have words on my arm, would be, may the situation serve to awaken compassion. The situation might suck. It might be really hard. Some of you have been with me this year. No, it was a hard year. There's a lot of like, can it be otherwise? Fruitless use of energy doesn't go anywhere. It just, the mind perseverates. Doesn't help. It is not onward leading to a place of, okay, can we take that longer inhale, longer exhale, settle in with, sweetie, it is just like this. And those phrasings, pleasant, unpleasant, are for me, have been transformative. That second foundation of mindfulness, they're called the Vedanas, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Every time our senses kind of come into contact with something, whether it's a sound, it's a sight, it's a smell, it's a touch, it's a taste, it's a thought, because in the Buddhist teachings, thoughts are a sixth sense. We have a often, mostly all the time, unconscious response that it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, which then kicks in a response or a reaction. If it's unpleasant, can I get away from it in some way? You know, similarly with the hindrances, that's the aversion. Like, oh, please, can I change it? Can I, if I'm cold or hot or whatever, this, we're constantly in a, can be constantly in a mode of reacting to what is unpleasant, as opposed to perhaps taking a moment or two to sit with, oh, this is unpleasant. Exhale. Right? We're not always having to be at the behest of something that is unpleasant, saying move or change or fix it. Again, sometimes we do, but allowing there to be that, this is unpleasant. Okay. Hang there for a minute. Similarly, when it's pleasant, it's nice. Oh, this is pleasant. Okay. What's this feel like? That's nice. And I need an encouragement to like, oh, this in this body, when this is pleasant. Oh, when there is a sense of equanimity and balance, pay attention. Oh, this is how this body feels. When there can be that sense of ease, relaxation, even however momentary it is, again, like note it. I don't think Rick Hansen says it quite like this, but in my mind, I'm like, take like a physical photograph as if as were like, remember, when the body is at ease, it feels like this. Right. And it's not so much of a grasping, wanting to hold on to it, as an awareness of, oh, this happens. Peace is here. Yeah. Momentarily. Okay. Momentarily is good. The poem is, I love the title of this poem by Rose Cook, a poem for someone who is juggling her life. Here we go. This is a poem for someone who is juggling her life. Be still sometimes. Be still sometimes. It needs repeating over and over to catch her attention over and over, as someone who is juggling her life finds it difficult to hear. Be still sometimes. Be still sometimes. Let it all fall sometimes. Which there might be, like, I can't, for many of us, of as women, jugglers of often our lives, but often others as well, it's a lot. So this, it can feel like this kind of incredible luxury to be still because we have so much to do or taking care of things or others. Okay, sweetie, sometimes can just be a moment, right? The sort of idea, like, I sit for an hour in the morning and I sit for an hour at night. Maybe that's awesome. And a moment to be able to build in these moments in the course of a day. Of that, again, that, so harping on this breathing today, but that inhale and an exhale kind of is a reveal as to what I'm working with personally as a moment. Oh, right. Pause here, right? Those rest notes in the music. That's art form, to be able to move between the motion in a way, to find those rest notes of, oh, here, pause here. I haven't skied in years, but the image of a skiing, like if you're moving through moguls, which I don't ski very well, that there's a moment where you pause to pivot. Yeah, it looks like when people ski well, they're like always moving. There's a moment of stillness to pivot. Or a similar image, I've talked about whitewater rafting. There's a moment, right? And allowing ourselves in the course of our days to kind of find this pause here as a way of putting in those moments of pause, to put down the fight against how it is. Sweetie, it is like this in the moment. It might be uncomfortable. We might be in pain, situations we're in that we don't like. Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. But it's all about how do we cultivate our response to it. That's what I so love about these teachings. It's not so much about being able to. There's a, I've shared the story before, but in the teachings, you know, somewhere in Asia, someone's sitting in a retreat, and it's a monastic, and I think the teacher comes upon the monastic. He's sitting beside a creek, and the monastic is like, "What are you doing?" And the guy's moving the younger monk is moving the rocks around in the creek because he doesn't like the sound of it, so he's trying to change it. It's like, no, that's what we do. Right, some version of like moving things around as if we're going to get a better tune for the creek, the rocks in the creek. Like, no, again, not necessarily the best use of our energies. Our energy is limited, or a lot of us are tired a lot. So where is our energy going? And I think that's what I love about the thought. Think, like, watching the thoughts, it can take up a lot of energy, a lot of mind space that comes with a lot of energy. Where can we tone it down or unhook from it? To be like, okay, that thought stream is going to go by. I don't need to swim in it, or that thought about the getting agitated about how things are. So the classic teachings, part of the classic teachings with equanimity, is for the eight worldly winds: praise and blame, gain and loss, pain and pleasure, fame and disrepute. Yeah, this is how life is. Those things are naturally occurring. And we can really, when we're in the negative side of loss or pain or unpleasantness or sickness or getting blamed for things, be like, oh, it's not right. Something's not right. Someone did something wrong, or I did something wrong. Sometimes that's true. But to build in the expectation that gain and loss, part of life. Pain and pleasure, part of life. Right. Sometimes we're in the, like, fame and disrepute, where it's sort of blame and not blame. These are just natural occurring phenomenon in this human realm. And I'll say this for myself. I feel like I was so misguided as a kid in terms of what was true about how the world works. It just works with, yes, some things go our way, often not. Okay. How do we respond to it? Friendships come and go. Okay. Relationships, we go into relationships, they end. Okay. But we have jobs, we lose jobs. We have houses, we lose houses. Okay. As a, it really can, again, taking out this layer, one of the expectation that it should be otherwise. Exhale. And to be like, if this is naturally occurring part of everyone's lives, sometimes we know and sometimes we can see it, and there are people that have the perfect lives. They're struggling too. Okay, that's built in. First noble truth, there is suffering in this life. Dukkha, there is dukkha. It's just dissatisfaction, it's stress. Yeah, it's a given. Okay, that being said, there are ways to work with it. There's week as we sit week after week, these practices teach us like how to understand what that suffering is, the clinging, the aversion, the hindrances of clinging and aversion, restlessness, worry, sloth, torpor, doubt. Okay. But all built in. But as we can start to see them, it's like seeing the scaffolding of human of how it is to be in this human realm. Okay. All of which to say can point to, oh, we can find a much easier path when we're willing to say, okay, the obstacle is the way. That beautiful Alison Luderman poem. What's in your way is the way. It's not a problem. We can make it be a problem because it's not what I wanted. Right? It happens all the time. Wait, this isn't on the time frame I want. I'm not actually getting what I want. It's a lot of me and I wanting, or whether we might want things for other people, the world, for sure. Other people in our lives, we may wish it to be otherwise. And there can be a wholesomeness in that, right? That's the sitting in the Brahma Viharas of, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you live with balance and ease. Those are well wishes from a wholesome place, not with an attachment that they have to be that way. Sort of therein lies the suffering. Yeah. Self observation without judgment by Donna Fals. Release the harsh and pointed inner voice. It's just a throwback to the past and holds no truth about this moment. Let go of self-judgment, the old learned ways of beating yourself up for each imagined inadequacy. Allow the dialogue within the mind to grow friendlier and quiet. Shift out of inner criticism, and life suddenly looks very different. I can say this only because I make the choice 100 times a day to release the voice that refuses to acknowledge the real me. What's needed here isn't more prodding towards perfection, but intimacy, seeing clearly and embracing what I see. Love, not judgment, sows the seeds of tranquility and change. So beautiful. Release the harsh and pointed inner voice. Some of us have had that for a long time. It's often to not good ends. Yeah. And then we tend to believe that voice. And maybe it's some voice that someone actually said something to us. Parent, sibling, teacher. Yes. Okay. But the way in which we still might carry it, the way we've adopted it as our own, to be able to see it. Oh, there's that voice. Does it help? Is it onward leading? Is this leading me to a place of tranquility and peace? If not, okay. Can we start to let it go? And sounds easy enough, but it can also just be a noting, oh, there's that voice. And family constellations work, or sort of there's all these ways of working with allowing that particular voice to take on its own form. It's a gremlin, it's the inner dictator, whatever it is. That And so doing allow us to kind of depersonalize it, be like, oh, there's that voice. Not trustworthy, not true, not congruent. Yeah. And then that line, like it's just a throwback to the past and holds no truth about this moment, invites in the question, Byron Katie, is it true? Is this voice saying this about me or about the situation or about, is it true? Is it really true? How do you know it's true? What if it wasn't true? And in the Book of Joy by the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, written by Doug Ablins about Abrams, about a visit of a week of the Dalai Lama and the Desmond Tutu being together, the Dalai Lama shares one of his practices. It is very much more formal form of what Byron Caney's pointing to, of his investigation of his own mind. Is this true? Is this thought true? How do I know it's true? Again, different, they phrase it differently, but what I like about knowing the Dalai Lama is like, oh, this has legs. This has been going, that kind of practice has been going on for centuries. The value of being able to question, is this true? Particularly when it's a negative thought about ourselves or about another. Yeah. Is this true? What if it weren't? What if it wasn't true? I shared during COVID, sort of in 2020 on forward, I was noticing in my own mind, I had a lot of opinions that I was very attached to in terms of what was happening politically. And Ajahn Suchito is teaching and listening to him, and he was like, his own practice of what if I don't have an opinion about this? So I undertook that practice. It was really free. It didn't mean I didn't care about things, and it didn't mean I didn't have my own opinion, but I wasn't so fixed. So maybe a different way is like, do I need to have a fixed opinion about this? And can I stay open, right, to my life, to others, to other opinions, to other views? It was pretty great. And there was a freedom that came because there, in my fixed views, I had a lot of righteousness that could get in the way of connecting or just to cause a lot of suffering. And again, this is not to be encouraging a lack of discernment or a lack of commitment to that which we believe to be true, but it's discerning what's actually true. And in so doing requires an internal reflection of what am I really value? What do I hold most dear? What we spoke about last week, where does my heart abide? Yeah, that's the place of truth. That's worth fighting for. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. I think. No, wait, there's one more poem I want to read. Sorry. You can open yours. It's by Julia Fehrenbacher. It's called The Most Important Thing. I might have read this before. I'm not sure. I am making a home inside my house, so, and inside myself, a shelter of kindness where everything is forgiven, everything allowed, a quiet patch of sunlight to stretch out in without hurry, where all that has been banished and buried is welcome, spoken, listened to, released, a fiercely friendly place I can claim as my very own. I am throwing arms open to the whole of myself, especially the fearful fault-finding. Especially the fearful fault finding, falling apart, unfinished parts, knowing every seed and weed, every drop of rain has made the soil richer. I will light a candle, pour a hot cup of tea, gather around the warmth of my own blazing fire. I will howl if I want to, knowing this flame can burn through any perceived problem, any perceived perfectionism, any lying limitation, every heavy thing. I am making a home inside myself, where grace blooms in grand and glorious abundance, a shelter of kindness that grows all the truest things. I whisper hallelujah to the friendly sky. Watch now as I burst into blossom. Okay, now I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. What might this shelter inside yourself look like? A shelter of kindness where everything is forgiven and everything is allowed. What might this home inside yourself look like that has a quiet patch of sunlight to stretch out in, that is fiercely friendly, that all parts, all of yourself are welcome, especially the fearful fault-finding, falling apart, unfinished parts. They have their perhaps their own couches, their own zabutons. They have their own cups of tea. In this shelter that I'm inviting you to envision within yourself, how does stillness show up? How might this stillness be manifested in this shelter within yourself? The shelter that can release the harsh and pointed inner critic. The shelter that is imbued with peace in this moment without judgment. The shelter is this moment in this heart space where everything that is welcome. And just allow yourself to fill in this image of this inner shelter and this inner refuge, this inner home. Allowing as much creativity to come in as possible as a tiny home, a she cave, whatever it is. Are there candles there? Are there windows with amazing views? Allowing whatever is placed in this home to be infused with peace, with acceptance, with equanimity and compassion, friendliness, whatever else speaks to the heart in this moment. May this, the image of this inner refuge, be a place to rest, a place to seek shelter and comfort, whether they imagine if it's a cabin in the woods, or a yurt in a meadow, a tent on a beach. But letting yourself really, in as much as possible, imagine yourself there. You are making a home inside yourself. Where grace blooms in grand and glorious abundance. This home inside yourself is a shelter of kindness that grows all the truest things, where you can whisper hallelujah to the friendly skies. May this shelter be a place of refuge, a place of peace, of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And I invite each of us to keep playing with this image. Maybe create a talisman, or those of you with artistic talent to draw it out or to write about it, such that it can become an easy and available place of refuge. It's having imagined it, it's always there to go back to. But the more we can be in relationship to it, the more alive it can stay. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you so much for your kind attention.